Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process, and in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started.
Futures is betting on the future, obviously, which makes sense because the future is always now. There's always a future. So that to me makes sense. Having a live spot market like they do in the crypto world, it would increase volatility. And I don't know if increased volatility is good for retail investors. What's going on, guys? Welcome into today's episode of Money Moves. As always, your host, Matty A., Mr. Breedwell, my co-host. We cover all things stocks, real estate, investing, and a little bit of politics to help you on your personal finance journey. Today, what is today? Today is April 23rd. April 23rd. And we got a great show for you guys. Not too many reports coming out this week.
A little drier, but we have other fun stuff.
We do have some interesting topics to dive into today with some TikTok updates. Another, if you could even, I know it's shocking, but if you can believe it, another $95 billion aid package going overseas of your hard-earned tax dollars. Don't worry.
That was wild.
We've got some updates on Mr. Trump and the consistent, what seems to be a witch hunt. Let's just be honest. They're just trying to throw anything and everything they can at this dude when there are so many people that have done equal or honestly much worse on the left. That being said, we got some updates there. It is earnings season. So Mr. Breedwell is going to get us some updates on what's going down there. Rate cuts and what, gosh, this narrative continues to go long in the tooth. Let's just say that. But we do have some updates there, some recession talks, stocks, Bitcoin, some interesting stuff that happened there this last week. And of course, some updates on the housing market in real estate. So as we jump in, first and foremost, man, congrats on taking down the poker tourney this last week. We went to a charity tournament that our buddy Jacques threw to raise. Really cool cause. Every year he puts on this poker tournament, invites 100 plus people, $100 buy-in. That $100 times 100 people, $10,000 immediately goes to this cause. And every year he picks a new child that is going through some kind of struggle. And the money from the buy-in, and then there's a lot of rebuying in and silent auctions and all kinds of stuff. So he just raises tons of money. And the guy to my left who has played poker two times and is literally on the second hand asking, do I call? Do I check? What do I do here? Sends me a text at 12:30 in the morning because I got knocked out early and went home. And sends me a text at 12:30 in the morning. I won the whole thing.
I won the whole damn thing. It took. I went from trying to play six cards on a five-card hand. I was like, I got three pair. That's when I was like, I got three fucking pair. And they were like, you can't get three pair. That's six cards. You can only play five cards. Good. And I was like, oh. I remember, and I was like, come to pop. I remember pot. Yeah. And
you laid it down like you had won it.
Everybody was making fun of me
and this
at that table. You know what I did? I shut up and I started watching. I'm a numbers guy. I know. It was great. The best part about it was it was single deck.
When I left, you literally had, I think, just like two or three chips left.
I had $1,500 in chips, and I ended the night with $1.6 million. I was big daddy on that.
Congrats to you, and big shout out to Jacques and his family and the community that he rallied. Amazing stuff to get plugged in like that. There was some great networking there. Met some really cool people. That was a ton of fun. TikTok, breaking news. The U.S. House has approved the bill banning TikTok in the U.S. if ByteDance, the parent company, refuses to divest. And as of 10 minutes ago, more breaking news that now the Senate has advanced the TikTok divestment or ban bill, and it seems to be getting some real traction.
I'm not upset. I don't mind it. Like I said to you earlier, I don't think that it's fair that China gets to say essentially this in their different way. U.S.-owned companies cannot work on our soil.
I agree.
So this is an eye for an eye, but in a little bit of a different way. I'm not gonna be a hypocrite and say that is why they're doing this. They're doing this essentially to just. I do agree with it though. I don't think that a Chinese-owned company should be allowed to operate domestically with as much influence on the age group that they do. That's why I'm behind it. And I was mentioning earlier that I think it might set precedent for other companies saying, hey, we need to get our act together because now we're open. We're out in the open, ready to get hit with a lawsuit.
Yeah.
A large class action lawsuit with hundreds of millions of people on it that we're not going to win and we're going to pay out a ton of money. Overall, to me, I don't think that social media companies should be regulated any other different than like how X is. I think X does a good job of letting people say what they want to say as long as it's legal. I think you should be able to say it. But I also am not letting the wool be pulled over my eyes and saying that China loves the United States. They don't love the United States. They like us because they have to because we're intertwined from a trade standpoint economically. But if they could, they would do without us. And I hope that we would be the same vice versa. That's why I think it's good. I don't think that the government should have influence on how social media companies govern outside of the law, the basic laws that exist, not harming somebody, not causing terroristic threats, things like that should not be allowed. But I don't want a Chinese company to have that much influence. I think it's pretty clear the influence that TikTok has had and the negatives that it's had and the time that it's had that influence and the time that it's done that, it's been a Chinese-owned company. If there's no change after this were to pass, let's say, then we know that was all a bunch of crap. But if there is change, then people are going to have to take a step back that are maybe not necessarily for this or not even for it, but don't know if they're for it or against it and say, okay, now there's more quality information getting to kids. There's always going to be bad stuff on there. But if there is a change and it is for the positive, I think that would be a huge eye-opener for regulators to say maybe this should be a broad application that we don't allow this type of crap on social media platforms where kids are exposed to it. If we have to verify age to go to a porn website, because that's what the law is now, why are people allowed to talk about the equivalent stuff or even more personal sexual items that kids should not be talking about and trying to convince them of one way or the other? Why is that allowed? I just think it needs to be a level playing field all the way around.
I don't disagree with you 100%. All I am saying is if this really was about China and protecting our kids, we wouldn't be allowing drag shows to be happening in elementary schools. We wouldn't allow China. A report came out last week that China owns just shy of 400,000 acres of farmland in America, many of that being around military bases tied to our infrastructure and our critical energy systems. A Department of Homeland Security and U.S. Border Patrol just released reports around Chinese nationals who have crossed U.S. border illegally. In 2021, it was 342. 2022, it was just shy of 2,000. In 2023, it was 24,000 total. Just so far this year in 2024, it's at 23,000. So if it was really about protecting the youth or protecting us from China, I just find it to be a little bit interesting that they're so focused on TikTok, but there's so many other facets of how they should be protecting us from China, but they're zeroed in on that. So do I think it could set precedent in a good way? Yeah, I wouldn't be upset if TikTok was banned. That being said, I also think it gives the government permission to come in and say, we're doing this for your own good. We're protecting you against something that is quote unquote bad based on our definition of bad, whether that's China or the next thing, right? And therefore gives permission to go and do what they're going to do. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing in the big picture, but to me, it just makes me question some things. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out. If there is a downside to banning China and getting TikTok out and people are upset about that because there are a lot of creators, or is it a creator economy that does bring a lot of revenue and ties into our GDP from TikTok itself and the creator economy, that could have a negative impact. That being said, I'm not upset about anything that China is benefiting from that we want to put a squash to.
Yeah, I think that if there's creators on that platform, they have an opportunity on Instagram, which is a Meta product, that would translate through to stock price. That stock price is held by millions of U.S. consumers. They also pay a dividend yield, and so that would be positive for a U.S. company, which would go to our GDP, and that would be positive for U.S. consumers that own that stock, so that's a positive. And I think that the reason it's TikTok is I think TikTok is there's always low-hanging fruit, and I think they're it. They're easy target. The other stuff that would be a lot more hard and a lot more intricate. And you also have to remember it's bipartisan. This isn't a left thing. This isn't a right thing.
Right.
It's people from the left and the right, which is very rare nowadays. And you also have to remember that the people that are voting on it are elected by constituents from all over the United States. So it seems to be that those people would put their neck on the line for their job. I think a lot more people... I think the ban on TikTok, I think people agree with parts of it. And everybody has their own part that they agree with because there's so many angles to it, why you may want it to be banned or changed or whatever the position is different than what it is now. And I think there's going to be that pot is much bigger than we think because using ban is a very specific word. I think if we broaden that and I say, who wants to see TikTok changed? I think you're going to get a way bigger group of people. And I would probably say it's the majority of parents because they know what's on there.
Yeah.
And sure. Even if it's not the sexual stuff or the transgender stuff or any of that, there's a lot of content that doesn't need to be on there for financial scams. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't need to be on there that talks about drug usage. There's a lot of still pornography. There's a lot of stuff of showing, I don't know what it's called when it's like gore or people dying and stuff. So that kind of stuff is also needs to be regulated. And I know that's on all social media platforms. I'm not going to say it's not even on X. It needs that kind of stuff. If children have access to see that, yeah. I don't think the kids need to be seeing that. And I say that knowing how when I was 13, 14, 15, 16 and how that would influence me because I was more like a ball of Play-Doh at that point or a raw steak and I could be cooked in any way or formed in any way. And better to get information on sports or things that are more relevant to my age group. So again,
it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see it. We'll see how it plays out.
You know, we'll track it.
Really interesting.
We'll keep you guys posted. Interesting take here that I would love to hear your thoughts on. We could be saying goodbye to the closing bell. The New York Stock Exchange is stirring the financial world with its consideration of 24-hour trading. This pivotal change could transform the New York Stock Exchange from an emblem of Wall Street to a tireless engine of global finance, operating nonstop to accommodate international markets and investors. I know they're polling right now. I'm curious, who are they polling? And how likely is this to actually become? That would be a massive change, I would think.
I feel like
right?
This is the first time in my career where I've heard it be talked about somewhat seriously. I don't know if it's been kicked around in prior years, but technology now is there to support it, right?
Yep.
I don't know how good or bad that would be because what is the only thing I can compare it to? It's like the crypto market.
Right. Yeah, that's what they said, right? It's in its need to adapt to round-the-clock trading, which is already familiar in crypto and future markets, the New York Stock Exchange has launched a survey among market players to gauge interest in a 24/7 trading model.
Futures is betting on the future, obviously, which makes sense because the future is always now. There's always a future. So that to me makes sense. Having a live spot market like they do in the crypto world, it would increase volatility. And I don't know if increased volatility is good for retail investors.
Yeah.
Because I think it would influence people to make more bad decisions than they already do. And so that, to me, I'm not saying that I don't want people to have access to the markets 24/7. That's not my position. My position is I've been doing this for 10 years now. So I understand how investors think, act, react, what they say, and then what they actually do when the shit hits the fan. So I don't know if that would be a good thing.
Yeah, to your point, they said it would be very interesting to offer investors the flexibility to respond immediately to international developments and late breaking news. Imagine trading Tesla stocks right after Elon Musk's midnight tweets. The push toward a 24-hour market also reflects a shift in investor behavior,
yeah,
accelerated by the pandemic and the rise of retail investing.
I also just think that if that was going to pass, I think a good middle ground would be like, you can purchase 24/7, but the sale orders can only transact during these hours of the day, because there's already futures markets to do that. If you see something happen, you can go get a put or a call option on something and trade in the futures market with that. And I just don't know why people think that we need to have a spot market open for that, because that increases volatility. And really who it affects is the majority of people that hold assets are not working. And so that would affect a lot of retirees. And I just don't know if that's a good thing to mess around with. I'm not saying the system we have right now is perfect, but damn, I don't know if we need to let people
give them more leash to go and hang themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of saying it. I think that's exactly what it would do, at least right now.
Yeah. Moving on to the recent aid package, the U.S. Senate approves over the weekend a $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. $61 billion of that going to Ukraine. And I don't know about you, but it really pissed me off to see the House floor waving a bunch of Ukrainian flags. I'm of the belief we have so many freaking issues and problems here in California, in states all across the country, that our tax dollars going over to other countries in this capacity egregiously. We're talking that
it's hundreds of $110
billion specifically over a 2.5-year period, 3-year period has gone to Ukraine. Hawaii got $700.
Has to be more than $110 billion. There's no way. It has to be more than that.
It probably is.
They just got 61 today. There's no way that it was over 50.
This was before this was added. So at probably $170+ billion.
Yeah, and that's just from us. They've gotten money from around the world too, from other places. And don't forget that they've gotten a shitload of money from crypto donations. So that there's a ton of money that they've been given. And here's what I'm going to tell you. Ukraine will not win the war, based on what I've seen at this point.
That's what most people have said. It's an endless money pit.
Correct, because Russia already has pretty much, they have plenty of money to run the war out for as long as they need to. They have plenty of people to run through and keep that 20% of Ukraine that they've invaded and held. They haven't made any headway. And all that they're doing is literally, in my opinion, putting people in the meat grinder. Really, there's nothing. I don't know what our money is being spent on over there. It's not a war. It's almost like when we were in Iraq. If you go to war with a country and you don't plan to take over that country, it's very hard to win the war.
Yeah.
In the United States gets in wars not to take over territory most of the time. We want to build a military base there.
Industrial complex, right? For example, Lockheed Martin earnings were beat in a very positive way today. They got awarded a $17 billion missile contract, right? That's good for U.S. stocks. That's good for U.S. business. Yes, that's just one little leg of the spider. But to me, it was just pissed me off seeing our government waving Ukraine flags on the House floor. I think it was Paulina Luna. Mm-hmm. She actually just introduced It was drafting new legislation to prevent foreign flags from being displayed on the House floor.
Cash
we can any. Be in partnership or in support of other countries and what they're doing and be respectful and democratic, right? Mm-hmm. And uphold what our democratic duties are without turning your back on American taxpayers, American citizens, and seeing all of our hardworking dollars not only go over there, but at the same time, spending and printing money and putting future generations further in debt at the expense of what?
At the expense of being the world police.
That's what we do. But it was interesting to see how many people were very frustrated by that. I'm not sure how you guys feel about that, but I don't know.
A little bit of money going to Taiwan, because I actually know Taiwan is a great foreign partner of us. They're an advocate of the United States. That's the first thing. They have been for many years. They haven't asked for money either. We're giving them money, and we've been giving them military support for decades. They've given us technology. They've given us semiconductor support. They're building another semiconductor factory in the United States to bring U.S. jobs. Taiwan Semiconductor, TSM, the ticker. That's a quality investment, I think. When we invest in relationships like that, where we want to help countries get better infrastructure, better military support so that they can become a financial powerhouse like Taiwan has become, that I believe is positive. Israel, I don't really know if they need money. I mean, you really going to tell me Israel needs money? I don't think so. But I understand why we're giving it to them as well. We're sure. Probably helping them replenish the military supplies that they've exhausted. And I'm certain it came with some sort of conditions that were a hush. I don't know what they would be, but I'm sure they would be hush. We get a lot of military intel from them, so I'm sure we got something from that. The money that goes to Ukraine, though, it's a lot of money, and we should spend that
outrageous amount of money.
Spend that kind of money, you're supposed to see some sort of return on investment. I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but I'm not sure if that is going to go anywhere without more intervention from a different military, or somehow Ukraine does something that is unbelievable. Months and months ago, they were making great headway, but it was pushing to where they are now. And they haven't really done anything for a long time except lose more and more soldiers. And Russia said they're just going to keep supplying soldiers and hold that line. They're not going to do anything different.
Yeah, and a significant amount of that money is just unaccounted for. It's literally unaccounted for.
It's obviously being spent in the wrong way, because you see these Ukrainian generals and stuff and oligarchs rolling around in Rolls Royces now and
massive compounds.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Yep.
All right, we'll divest off of the world stage, and let's get into earnings season.
It's a beautiful time.
The market responding relatively well to earnings season. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing out there? What's the sentiment? What are you feeling? What are the surprises or spot on expectations of what you guys were expecting to happen?
Earnings are good, and I was expecting earnings to be good. I said it that analysts revised down their earnings again last quarter, so I thought that it was going to set us up for a decent year. I said that last year at the end of the year, and here we are, Q2. Banks had a really good kickoff. I believe Bank of America was one of the only ones that was bad, and they've really reported not great earnings, or it was earnings or revenues, I can't remember, but they missed on one of their reports, and it was mainly due to their lending business being down, which is no shocker there. But you have JP Morgan, a lot of the other banks that have more wealth management arms. They're reporting great earnings. They actually knocked the ball out of the park again. And that, as I said a few weeks ago, if banks start off earnings season and report, that's very indicative of a strong year. We generally have a good year in the economy when that happens. Not the market, the economy. And the market and the economy are different. We also had today, massive international insurer, Chubb, they had an earnings beat and a revenue beat. Texas Instruments, they had a revenue and earnings beat. I believe we had a Lockheed Martin,
Visa.
All these companies reporting positively. And then Tesla actually had a miss on revenues and earnings, but gave positive guidance as far as they're going to work on a lower cost EV model than they even currently have. And it's going to be their probably more mass produced item.
Their Honda Civic?
Yeah, something like that. Their entry level, though if you look at the Model X and Model Y, it's an entry level car in my opinion. They're not in nice entry level cars, better amenities than most. So that's why their stock is moving after hours. We have still a ton more earnings this week. I can't even name all the companies because it's so many. But if earnings continue to come in, not only will we see the last 6 days that we've had, now it'll be 8 or 9 days ago now by the time this gets heard by some people, but the past volatility we've had due to the conflict over between Israel and Iran, that's pretty much done now. No shocker there. That's why you don't make moves on short-term volatility like that. And we should bust right through that and continue to go because earnings are what drive stocks. If earnings are good, stocks will be purchased and stock prices will go up. That's what happens. Shout out to everybody who kept money in the market and put money in the market because that was the smart thing to do.
The U.S. economic boom is unbelievable, Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase has said. Even if we go into a recession, the consumer's still in good shape. And the S&P 500 just flashed a bullish signal that suggests a 19% gain by August 2025. This is according to Bank of America. And then you see very interesting headlines, complete opposite, a no rate cut scenario, risk fueling a hard landing in 2025, Apollo chief economist says. What are, you know, we've heard the recession talk go back and forth, endless, over and over again. Any new insights around whether the U.S. economy has a threat of recession at any point in the near future?
Nope. GDP will report actually this week. It's probably going to be around 2.2 to 2.4, which is positive. Second to that, the consensus around the hard soft landing is, and I've said this and I've been saying it for now almost a year, is that no landing could be a potential, meaning that the market doesn't really fucking care what rates do. They're either going to be cut or they're not, or they're going to be the same, whatever. Market's going to keep chugging along. That was not as much consensus as I would say it is now, because nobody thinks they're going to raise rates that has any sentiment of 2 cents of common sense. But cutting is, it's really this variable right now that some days cuts are back on the table, and then 2 days later, they're right back off. So that's a really hard one to put, but I think everybody is in agreement that the market seems to keep going up. And even though that rate cuts seem to keep, you know, splicing down and down, we went from 6 to 4 to still 3-ish are priced in, and now maybe only 1 might happen. And the market's like, doesn't matter. Earnings look good. Consumers are spending, travel is doing well, leisure is doing well. People are still, I don't know how, buying houses. We had new home sales come out today, beat. I think it was 693 versus 670 expected.
Yeah, we'll cover that in a second.
So like, I don't know. I don't think there's going to be, I don't know when rates are going to get cut. I still do think they're going to get cut this year.
Go ahead. Yeah, finish.
I just don't think I know the economy is not going to go into recession this year. I don't know how, I just don't know. I don't think it's going to go back. I think that we're always going to have these little pullbacks every few months. The market doesn't go up in a straight line. Neither does your house value. And that's opportunity for people that are investing to get good deals and then benefit from that. Sorry, Matt, go ahead.
No, I was going to say speaking of rate cuts taking longer and or being less than what was maybe initially expected coming into 2024. BlackRock CEO Larry Fink has said, I don't think inflation will get back to 2% anytime soon. The inflation fight has stalled at the first rate cut won't happen until December. This is per Bank America. The acceleration of inflation this year makes a cut prior to December challenging in our view. This is one of Bank of America's analyst, Michael Gapin, citing the first quarter core CPI inflation, which rose to 4.5% annually from 3.3% in late 2023, is making it a little bit more challenging for the Fed to cut a little bit more aggressively. Jerome Powell has signaled a delay in expected interest rate cuts. He said that the Fed needs more time to be confident that its fight against inflation is actually working.
Even though they literally said in December that they'd won, which is crazy.
Yep. An analyst suggests excess money and the printing that occurred from the post-pandemic era and those policies may be drained from the economy this year, which would push out a little bit further in terms of their timelines for cutting more aggressively.
Right now, it looks like there's a pretty good chance that it's in September, which still gives us 3 opportunities. I definitely know it's not going to be in May. That's 7 days away. Something crazy would have to happen for it to be in June. July is still about a 40% chance of a cut, 50-ish percent chance of a pause. So
it seems like it's looking more realistic later in the year.
Mark my words. Whatever PCE says is what we will do. It doesn't matter on CPI, doesn't matter on PPI. Those are good indicators, but those are good indicators of specific areas that they said that they're not using anymore as metrics. Core was top end. They switched from core to PCE because they felt that energy and shelter were too much of a influence on that metric. Shelter mainly being, I think, 39% of that equation. Energy only being about 6%, but together they make up 45-ish percent of the equation. They felt that they were too volatile and to remove those would give them a more accurate trend line. That has and has continued to trend down and has not gone up on any reports. So just keep that in mind. Second thing I'll say is, please don't forget, they also said they don't need to see 2 to start cutting. Yep. They just need to see a consistent trend towards 2. And right now, we are on a consistent trend towards 2. It might be 10 basis points a month. 10 basis points a month eventually gets us to 2.
Yeah, and that kind of is in line with what CEO Larry Fink of BlackRock says, is I just don't think inflation will get back to 2% anytime soon, but that doesn't mean that's the marker for the Fed to go, okay, now we can cut interest rates.
What if it's 2.4 next report? That would be 30 basis point swing in one report. And then we're like, okay, now we're on the lower half of, we're closer to 2 than we are 3, because that's not the argument right now. We're closer to 3 than we are 2. But what if they say, hey, you know what? As we brought up last episode, we don't need to be at 2 because we were at 2.4 to 2.6 for years leading up to 2020. Why do we need to get to this 2% target? Because we want to? Maybe they revisit the drawing board on that.
Yeah, that's absolutely possible. And to your shelter comments, new home sales increased to 693,000. The annual rate in March. NAR, National Association of Realtors, released a summary of existing home sales data showing that housing market activity declined 4.3% this March from February of 2024. March's existing home sales reached a 4.19 million seasonally adjusted annual rate, which is down 3.7% from March of 2023. March's inventory of unsold listings as of the end of the month was up 4.7% from last month.
That's good news.
Standing at 1.1 million homes for sale compared with March of 2023, inventory levels are up 14.4%.
Good.
The median new home sales price is down 13% from the peak. Now note that the median and average price are down due to a mix of homes sold, not because of large price declines. What we're actually seeing is home builders are building less expensive homes to keep up with the volume and the demand that is needed and required. And it's a little bit more in line with their financial modeling and the budgets that they have to adhere to still be able to turn profits, to meet investors' demands and shareholder requirements that they're trying to hit to keep the stability and the momentum that many of these home builders are trying to sustain as they navigate this challenging landscape as well. Inventory is up 3% week over week. It's up 30.9% year over year. Now, again, it's still down compared to that 2019 number. But that being said, it's starting to inch closer towards that. And we're seeing with affordability still being a major issue, these, I think, graphs are going to get a little bit more in line with where the Fed wants to see them to be.
It's been 5 years, man. I was just thinking that it's been 5 years at this point.
It's crazy, right?
Like we've been talking, I was thinking, man, we've been saying that for 5 years.
5 years.
I can't believe that.
Yeah. And according to NAR's Housing Affordability Index, housing affordability declined nationally in February compared to the previous month. Again, bad news is good news when we're talking about what the Fed wants to see, even though it may not necessarily be what you or certain people in your circle may want to see or feel. It is something that, you know, is what the Fed wants to see. The monthly mortgage payment decreased by 3%, while the median price of single-family homes declined modestly by 1.5%. The monthly mortgage payment decreased by $59 from last month. The average salary required for a median-priced home in the U.S. has jumped 45.5% since 2020.
And that's directly due to interest rates.
And the median home sales price is dollar-wise $378,250, which is up 4.5% year over year and just about $5,000 shy of a record high hit in June of 2022. So
it's almost $400,000 a house as an average nationwide. That's great for existing homeowners. That's just a really big hurdle to jump for new homeowners.
Yep. Now, shifting back over to the crypto market.
Yeah.
Bitcoin halving has now been completed.
I don't even know if that's a positive or a negative. I'm about to find out right now. Wow, look at that. Bitcoin has done nothing. It's completely flat over the past day, and it's up 4% on the week, trading at 66,000. It dropped as low as 59,573 back on April 18th.
Gold bull, Mr. Peter Schiff had noted that.
And you might say something I agree with here, so I don't know, but let's see.
Let's see. I think you're going to agree. My nephew, Pump Global, just told CNBC that hardcore Bitcoiners are already fully invested and that any new money coming into Bitcoin will have to come from Wall Street. But I think Wall Street is about to start selling. That is a recipe for a Bitcoin crash. Buckle up, holders.
I think the one thing he's missing is Wall Street doesn't hold Bitcoin for itself. It custodies on behalf of its clients. Those clients would need to sell in order for them to get rid of it. It's almost like saying, hey, I bought a part of this fund, and the fund saying, hey, I know you just bought this, but we're selling your shares right now. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
What I do agree is that people are going to start seeing that, especially those geopolitical little tests that we had, very clear that Bitcoin is definitely not a store of value. It's just not, because stores of value do not decline in high volatility times. They normally appreciate. Gold had a spike up during that time. That's because people still view and are going to use gold as a store of value for that. The whole time through the Israel-Iran conflict, Bitcoin was down, minus little spikes up in here, but overall down. And that needs to be recognized by people, because a lot of the argument is it's a store of value. It's digital gold. If it's digital gold, why are ETFs, which are digital gold or paper gold, moving up, and gold prices, which is physical spot prices, moving up, but the price on Bitcoin is moving down? And that's because it's not viewed by serious investors as a store of value. It's viewed by people as a great place to speculate, because it's really good when you have a high risk asset to be able to get out of it whenever you want. That's why casinos never close. You get to go in and play for as long or as little as you want. That's exactly what the crypto market is. And the stock market's regulated gambling too. Let's just be honest. We're gambling on prices going up, and sometimes they go down. You get benefits of dividends or coupon rates while you wait. The difference is there's nothing backing crypto. You cannot say, my crypto, where is Bitcoin? That's a hard question to answer. Where do you go if there's fraud with your Bitcoin? There's nobody to answer to. There's nobody that regulates it. These things, although sometimes they're cumbersome and we want to live without them, kids don't want to listen to their fucking parents sometimes. But they need guidance in order to get to the right spot. And parents aren't always 100% right, but they generally have the direction moving forward and good for their kids. We are the kids in this example. The parent is going to be regulators. We need regulation on it for it to get seriously adopted. And the whole argument is no regulation. It's just why it's not going to go to the place it's going to go. I have talked about the crypto that I'm exposed to and the reasons that I like it. And it's all speculation. It's pure speculation. It's not serious investing. If I make a lot of money on it, great. If I don't, awesome.
We've got an interesting proposal by Senator Elizabeth Warren to tax 1% on Bitcoin accounts over $50,000.
Here you go. Listen up closely, folks. This will be the one time you hear me back Bitcoin. That's not appropriate, obviously, for crypto at any level or any non-qualified or qualified assets.
Explain in layman terms what she's trying to do here.
Let's imagine you bought something for $1,000 and it's now worth $2,000 in your account. And instead of using 1%, let's use 10%, because it's easier math. Senator Warren's proposal, let's say it applied to your investment, even though the levels are too low. Let's just say that it did.
Yep.
She would want to take $100 of your $1,000 of profit, even though the profit's still sitting in your account and you have not sold, you have not realized it, it's just sitting there. The problem with that, and why people should understand that it's just bogus and it's a stupid bill that she's just doing to pander to her base is when there's an always an equal and opposite reaction, folks. When you push on something, it doesn't move sometimes because it's pushing back. There's an equal and opposite. If you are going to make the point, and this would stand up in any court, if you're going to make the point that you're going to tax unrealized gains, you have to recognize unrealized losses. And I will give everybody a hint what there's more of in the market because of retail investors. Losses.
Yep.
So that would instantly not go anywhere. It would lose the government tax revenue. It would not make them tax revenue. And the small amount of people that they could even figure out how to get money out of that had Bitcoin addresses over $50,000 with earnings would be so minuscule. It's a $2 trillion market, $1.7 trillion market Bitcoin is. That's not big enough to have any impact on our fiscal supply in the United States. It's a stupid bill. It's a stupid bill, and it's from one of the dumbest senators.
God,
she just does stuff. And again, she's one of the worst because she's just like Nancy Pelosi or some of the other Republicans that we've mentioned.
Yeah,
she uses her position to enrich herself, her family, and rides the back of her constituents to do so.
As of, I think, this was like 2 weeks ago, I went down a little rabbit hole on some of the dirty politicians out there. Her name was on one of the lists, and of the tenure she's had in her position, her and her husband, I think, make $180,000.
She makes like $250,000. That's her like salary.
And their accumulative net worth while being in these positions has grown to $68 million in net worth.
It's ridiculous.
The math does not add up. Doesn't add up.
It doesn't. Because if it did, almost everybody in California would be a millionaire.
Yeah.
It's because out here, guys, probably not hourly. There's a few hourly jobs that two people could work, like management level hourly jobs. But at career pay salary jobs in California, it is very common to have a two working household well above 250,000.
There would be millions of millionaires in California.
Correct. There would.
Based on that math, if those similar or better income households, according to her and her husband's salary, we'd have a lot of $68 million net worth family households in California.
And the reason we don't is because it's very hard with that amount of income to generate that amount of net worth. It's not impossible, but it would take a lot of, I don't know, insider information, cronyism, rule bending, maybe to get there. And we don't have access to that kind of stuff. So the craziest thing is, and it, again, I'll say it, so everybody, it's always on record. It's not just Democrats. It's also Republicans. Need to be held accountable. We need to ban politicians being able to trade individual stocks, and they need to have no discretion over their investment accounts. So like how I manage my clients' accounts. If I manage your money, you do not get to pick what you're invested in. You get to tell me your risk tolerance, and I get to pick that for you. If I was letting my clients pick investments, why am I bailing them?
Yeah.
Yep. So again, wild thoughts, not going to go anywhere. It just is going to make noise. It'll give her base some chatter until she comes up with something else to tax the space that your car takes up in your driveway because it gets in the way of air or something like that. I don't know.
Did you want to cover anything on the gold graph or Monster versus Apple?
Yeah, I think something that was really interesting on there was a graph of, it was just inflows and outflows from US ETFs. So I want to be very specific. This is not physically held gold or purchased gold. This is gold bought through exchange traded funds. And the very specific one I believe I was looking at was GLD. That's the ticker. Not a recommendation to buy this. I don't own this. And if you're considering buying gold, you should check with your financial advisor, a financial professional. I was checking those graphs, and why I was thinking that international money was coming in to purchase US gold was because the net inflows and outflows were like negative 200 and about 80, 270 some odd million was 273.6 million was the negative outflows for gold for the month of April. That means that more people sold gold positions in GLD in the United States than bought. So how come the price of GLD is continuing to go up? That's people right. outside of the United States purchasing that. And I said, I think one or two podcasts ago, I believe that the volume or what's driving gold up is international money coming. And specifically, I believe from China, because they can't purchase physical gold like we can here in the US. So their access to gold is on paper. A lot of investors do here in the US via ETFs. We, for our clients, we normally buy through BlackRock's Gold Fund IAU, which is it's the same thing. It's a way to get access to gold that it's easy to trade it.
Right.
It moves like a stock. And that's how I prefer to hold gold for my clients.
Not having to go down to the local
no.
dealer and grab bars.
So I'm going to smelt it, hurry up, hit my strike price, something like that. And then the other thing that I thought just was really cool was just to show people why it's good, A, to hold things long-term because the opportunities that are out there. And then that we are always here past few years been the FANG stocks and the Magnificent Seven and the Great Nine. I don't know. There's all these superhero freaking group names for these stocks. But one that always gets left out, which is honestly one of the highest earning stocks, I would say, ever. Yeah, yeah. Maybe for this time period from 2000 to, or from 2001 to current. It's not Google. It's not Microsoft. It's not Meta. It's not NVIDIA. It would be Monster Beverage Corporation, Monster Energy.
That's crazy.
And the cumulative return on that stock over the same period of time of Apple to Amazon is like 100 and what is that number
11, there? 11,000.
111,900% plus rate of return versus the same dollar put into Apple would have gotten you about 45,700% rate of return and the same money put in Apple about 41,000. Is that four or six?
Amazon is 40,497%
rate of return.
Same time frame, rate of return, and Apple was 45,719.
Cumulative, not annualized. Cumulative. That means correct. The gross amount of dollars added on.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
So one thing to keep in mind from that, this is the opportunity that I tell people why when I get more sophisticated investors that are down for some of the volatility and risk long-term, holding individual stocks for a very long time can pan out to extremely good rates of return. You just have to buy quality names. All three of those names are quality. And the crazy thing is, if you would just hold those three names over that period of time, you would have not only smoked the S&P 500, but you would have done it by a margin that was like, made you one of the best traders ever. And you would have bought three very well-known names. You just wouldn't have thought, man, Monster Beverage Company is going to make it so big, but they're really like, they're almost like our domestic Red Bull. They're a huge beverage company. The other thing that I would just also put into that is the volatility you get from those stocks is sometimes very high. So for a lot of our clients and for a lot of my clients, I'll blend in ETFs or funds that we can buffer that. But long-term investing tends to have returns that are more favorable as long as you hold the stocks that are quality for a long period of time. That graph just shows you three very high return names and kind of a shock, because if you ask most people who, you know, between these three companies over the last 20 years, what's made more money, I think a lot of people would say either Amazon or Apple.
Yep.
And Monster Beverage has made way more of a return.
Yeah,
for
when you
investors.
Sent me that, I thought that, man, that's crazy. But
yeah, so it's pretty cool.
That's why I pay you to manage my stock picks and my financial portfolio in the market. If you guys haven't connected with Ryan and his amazing team yet, and you want to do so, to do the free financial x-ray, to talk about things like this, you can connect with them by texting the word x-ray to 844-447-1555. It's something that they do for all of our Millionaire Mindcast listeners free of charge. So if you want to take advantage of that, don't hesitate to do. As we close up today, did you watch the... Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney boxing match?
I saw the highlights.
So I watched it. I've been seeing, watching as it's been leading up to the fight. And most people thought Ryan Garcia was like losing his mind.
I mean, he was doing some weird stuff.
He was doing some weird stuff. He said he got taken out into
a forest and like some field, had to watch kids be out.
Like some real conspiracy stuff. And he was drinking and he was smoking on camera and he was doing all kinds of stuff. He basically spent months before his boxing match pretending to be drunk, pretending to be high, out of his mind, and going into the fight. The odds of him winning were extremely low, like way low. All of the boxing experts and everybody that was odds makers, all of that were saying he's going to get his ass whooped. Devin Haney was dialed in. Dude was locked in, running, training, doing all the right things. Ryan Garcia bet $2 million on himself to win. He wins the fight. He earns a $12 million payout in addition to his fight money, landing him a total of $50 million.
Gangster.
He basically afterwards came out on a bunch of interviews saying it was all an act. I did this because of that exact reason. I wanted everybody to bet against me. I wanted to use it as fuel and motivation. And I also wanted to use it as an opportunity to financially change the course of my life. And he did just that. So I just thought it was... This is a legendary boxing story right now.
He knocked him down three times in the fight, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then five times.
Yeah,
was the last one, did it was a TKO?
The ref should have called two that he didn't. He's got
some elbows to the face.
Everybody was betting against this dude. So it's just a great reminder that if you believe in yourself, if you have that undeniable belief, and you're putting in the work behind the scenes, it doesn't matter what anybody says or what anybody thinks.
Yeah.
As long as you yourself are convinced in your plan, the belief you have in yourself, and you're willing to put in that work. So big shout out to Ryan Garcia. I give major props. Whether you like him or not, whether you like his antics or not, anybody that bets on themselves in spite of everybody else hating and trying to pull them down and wins and succeeds, I can't do anything but respect that. So I thought that was a cool story to share and wrap up on today. Again, if you guys want to check out any of the resources, links that we got available for you guys, check out millionairemindcast.com. You can text the word x-ray 844-447-1555 to connect with Ryan and his amazing team. And if you're not on my deals list, you're a credit investor, you want to know about what deals I'm investing in and offering out specifically that are my own, you guys can text the word deals to 844-447-1555. Thank you guys so much for tuning in each and every week. We'll see you guys on next week's episode. Until then, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers.
Cheers, y'all.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Money Moves. Be sure to tune in next week for more news and updates. And if you got some value from today's show, all we ask is that you take 2 minutes and leave a review in iTunes, where by doing so, you're going to get entered in to win a $100 gift card. Also, don't forget to take advantage of Ryan's free financial x-ray on your investment portfolio. And to do so, all you have to do is text the word x-ray to 844-447-1555. What we have found by offering this out is most people have no idea what they're being charged from a fee perspective, or really in most cases, overcharged, and whether or not their current investment and financial plan is actually aligned with what they're trying to accomplish. And this is something that Ryan and his amazing team do for all of our listeners for free. So be sure to take them up on that. Again, that's x-ray. One word, 844-447-1555. Also, if you're an accredited investor and you're not on my deals list, be sure to text the word deals to 844-447-1555 to be notified of the private investment offerings my team and I put out. And last, don't forget to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family at MillionaireMindcast.com. Whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, mastermind events, calculators, the Rich Life Planner for those looking to take their goal setting and productivity to the next level. We've got all kinds of great and valuable tools available at MillionaireMindcast.com. With that being said, that's all for this week. Until next week's episode, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.